We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. willpledge.org. Now here's your program.
Well, when it comes to major moments in history, whether it's 9/11 or World War II or the Korean War, why is it important to preserve these tidbits of history, especially areas where there was conflict like 9/11? Why is it important to keep that history alive for young people?
Sure. Those who don't remember their history are doomed to repeat it. So I think that, you know, we are. I mean, if we don't recall where we've been, we won't know where we are and we won't know where we're going. And until and unless I think we get a better grasp on some of our history, and as a history major, I feel pretty passionate about this. But I also think we've done a poor job of bridging history to present tense and to helping young people understand how does that apply to me today. I think when we're teaching World War II, it's easy to get 17-year-olds to roll their eyes, unless you have a 17-year-old who's interested in history. I think when we're teaching about 9/11, it's easy to get 10-year-olds to not be sure what we're talking about because they were just barely born. So until I think we can build bridges of understanding what happened, what does that have to do with where we are now, and what does that have to do with where we're going, and if we're not careful, we might head in some same directions. So how can we change some of those directions?
Well, and by same directions, you don't mean another terrorist attack. That could be prevented by more education. What do you mean by that?
Well, it could be another terrorist attack. We're not invulnerable by virtue of being the United States from too much of anything right now, are we, in a global society? So we live globally. People are connected. We can reach each other with the push of a button in healthy ways and in pretty unhealthy ways. So I think in a very real and a very mean way, without saying to five-year-olds, and if we're not careful, which is inappropriate, I mean, to scare them is not okay, but to say to 16-year-olds in a social studies class, so let's go back 10 years. You were 6 years old, but let's go ahead 10 years. How can we prevent something like that from – I think engaging them in questions, engaging them in active discussion can – definitely, we hope, help us, or what's the use of education? Then I guess we're just there to memorize stuff, aren't we?
Well, and you know, especially in communities like Oakwood, for example, where it's a little bit less diverse, it's smaller, it's not like Champaign-Urbana, why especially is it important to go beyond those very general details, especially in communities that are less diverse and smaller?
Yeah, there's an obvious answer to your question. I'm not going to give you the obvious answer. I think sometimes we undersell the diversity of the Oakwoods of the world. Life is changing as we know it, and lots of communities, including smaller ones, are getting more diverse than they've ever been. Economics are changing a lot. You've got a huge group of haves and have-nots in all sorts of communities. So I think even in our smaller communities where we look like we're white and we look like we're all alike and we look like we think alike and we look like we act alike, we're different. And so I think all over the board, we need to address these issues of not just understanding and tolerating differences, but celebrating them in Oakwood, in Champaign, in Detroit, in L.A. So in those places where there's black folks and brown folks and white folks and there's equal mixes, it probably becomes more apparent to us that we need to do more in the areas of respecting difference, understanding it, and learning how to accept and deal with it and celebrate it. But I think in our smaller communities, we owe our kids the same thing because they may go out to larger communities and live in them where they, too, are surrounded by people who not only are different on the inside but are different on the outside. So you don't have to be scared if you're from Oakwood and there's a group of African-Americans walking by you because those people are bound to be mean, aren't they, and they're going to get you. And instead, we can come to understand that we can learn to respect lots of people and we can learn to be hurt by lots of people, color aside.
For educators, when they go in front of a classroom and they talk about this, what do they have to keep in mind, for example, talking about a big historical event that, you know, centered around a lot of tragedy? You know, as you said, it's important to, again, go beyond this, the very, you know, on the surface details. But what should they keep in mind in terms of being sensitive but also being accurate?
Yeah, I think a few things are important to keep in mind. One is the age of the student you're working with. So you're not going to treat a 5-year-old kindergarten class on 9/11, commemorating 10 years perhaps, as you're going to treat a 17-year-old advanced history class. You're not going to treat 12-year-olds like you would treat 6-year-olds. So I think developmentally we have to be in touch with it's a great question. I was asking my 9-year-old grandson today. I said, yeah, I'm going to go on the radio and talk with a gentleman about 9/11. And what do you know anything about that? Kai happens to be his name. And he said, yeah. And I said, so what do you know? And I think we ought to do this with kids. And he said, well, I know that some people, I guess, were mad and the Twin Towers, and they flew planes into it, and a lot of people were killed. Now, he wasn't even born then. I said, so where'd you learn that? And he said, well, from my teachers. And I said, so let's say this September 11th, you were in your fourth grade class. What do you think teachers should do with that? Anything or just ignore it? First of all, I want to let you know that I don't think we ask kids enough what we think we ought to be doing. So this is one gem I'd give to teachers is check it out with your kids, like I did with my grandson. That's not genius, but I think that. And then he said, you know, I think we should have them write speeches about it. So I said, well, that's interesting. So, but you don't even know about it. What would you write? And he said, well, I'd write what I know. And then what would you have them do? And then he'd say, I'd have the teacher tell me what she knows or what he knows, and then maybe we could talk about it. Now, that's a 9-year-old, and he wasn't born. And he's not, I mean, he's a marvelous young person, and I very subjectively love him dearly. But I think it's a regular 9-year-old. So be developmentally appropriate. Please don't ignore it. Please don't just let it sit on the event alone. There were some mean people, or in social studies, American. You know, you remember when the Taliban came over and they flew two planes and 19 people changed the world as we know it that day and over 3,000 people died. And what do you think about that? We don't have to do that with 5-year-olds, but we certainly do have to do some of that with 17-year-olds. What do you think about it? How do you feel about it? What would you write to a family who's affected directly by that? What do you want them to know about what we remember? And we will never forget you, and we hope you're doing okay. But the other point I'd want to make here, Sean, is I think this is against even the grain of what I just said. I think we do a great job in America of celebrating big events, positive and negative. I don't think we do a very good job of couching those real events in real lives. So I think we'll do some great work this country around commemorating 9/11. What are we going to do on October 11th? And what are we going to do on December 11th? And what are we going to do in 2014 when it's the 13th anniversary of, you know, and it doesn't come up with a magic number of 10. So I don't know if any of that makes sense, but I think how we live every day, how we challenge our kids to live every day, has as much to do with how we commemorate 9/11 as the event itself, and helping young people remember that has to do with how we commemorate it.
You know, what about in situations where, I mean, kids say really, you know, sometimes very brilliant, sometimes very not very focused things, but in many cases very brilliant, but I would say always very opinionated. How do you deal with a student who says something that is not based on facts or details, but just what they think they know or what they've heard? How do you go about addressing that issue? I mean, without insulting them, without upsetting them, without, you know, criticizing the person who said that thing to them?
Yeah. My style, and this will be different from teacher to teacher, my style is a probing style. So tell me, James, where you learned that and how did you get that? And what if I were to say to you, I don't want to go against anything your parents have said to you. So if you get that from your home, please believe that, okay? Do you mind if I ask you about that a little bit now? I mean, maybe ask his permission. So those people that you say dress funny, somebody wears a burqa or what they wear is different, and they think they're weird. Where did you get that from? And let's say I had my tie on wrapped around my neck today. Would you think I'm weird? Well, yes. Well, do you know me? Well, yes. Well, do you think I'm – well, I still think you're weird. But, you know, I mean, he's a teacher, you know. But I want to get them to relate it to the present tense and relate it to respecting what their family may have taught them. On the other hand, I want them to think about it a little bit, because isn't our role as educators to get kids to critically think about things? And I think sometimes we have to do that stronger than other times. Shauna, you're in second grade. What's 2 plus 2? 5. We don't say to somebody who says, what's 2 plus 2? It's 5. You're stupid. We don't also say to them, wow, that's right, do we? So we get them to think about, now think about that. You know, show 2 and 2 and count those and how many is it? And I think we owe it to our kids to do the same thing with less concrete discussions, if that makes any sense. Probe, challenge, affirm what they know from their family, get them to think maybe beyond that in a developmentally appropriate, critical thinking way. And there's an awful lot of gray in this world and not all black and white.
Well, and what's very gray, I would say, is political relevance to all of this. I mean, people have, I mean, depending on what party you lean to, depending on, you know, where you view the war, I mean, your perception of the events following 9/11 can be very different. And I would say with kids, a lot of their perceptions may come from their parents. How should an educator go about talking and working with a child's parents before, and it could be a teenager, it could be younger than a teenager, but communicating with the parent, you know, going into that lesson, and or should they? Should they not even talk to the parent prior to a lesson?
Yeah, for one, we could spend all of our time emailing each other as parents. Couldn't we back and forth about what I'm going to teach, and do you approve of this? Well, no, I don't approve of this. Well, if I said it this way, would you approve it? Well, no, I wouldn't approve of it. So, for one, there's a standard curriculum that's taught, and we're obligated as educators to follow a standard curriculum. And where parents have issues with that, I would want to listen to the parents and hear that. And so at that open school night, I'd want to let them know, here's the kind of the things we're going to cover. Now, where we get stuck is in these red-letter words like 9/11 will bring up some discrimination, difference, violence. You start to get into issues around religion. You start to get into issues around how. So I think in that regard, we owe it to parents to tell them what we're going to do with that. And here's a unit that I plan to do, and I'd like you to discuss this. And I think the more communication we have with parents, the better. While, sorry to say this to you, parents, you aren't the educator in the classroom teaching them. So I hope you'll trust me. I hope you'll trust that I will believe that what you're doing at home is important. And I hope you'll trust that what I'm doing here I also think is important. And if we ever happen to disagree about how I present something, I hope you'll call me directly or email me directly and we'll have a conversation about it.
Yeah, and then the other issue, I mean, a very sensitive issue, is the being connected to somebody, either a family member or a family friend who died, either in one of the wars or in, you know, that followed, or in 9/11. What about dealing with a child who, you know, has that sort of connection? And again, by child, it could be a teenager or, you know, somebody you're educating.
Sure, and I think if we can give young people a forum or bringing that up, either in a classroom where we discuss, you know, has anybody in here ever lost someone that you've cared about, or through journal writing. A lot of our kids at real young ages, one of the most powerful things I think educators do is journal writing. And they have kids write, and the educators respond, and they have kids write, and the educators respond. And it's a way for a young person who may not choose to put something out there publicly to put it out there publicly. Too often, I think, as educators, we set ourselves up to be experts, and we have to have answers like 2 plus 2 really is 4. And I don't think in this realm, where we're discussing probably more soft and subjective things, we necessarily have to have answers. I do think we have to give kids respect and a forum to talk about it or write about it and respect what they talk and write about.
I think it can be definitely be a gray area when you're going against emotion and you don't want to be the counselor, but you want to be the educator, the historian in all of this.
Powerfully gray. I think it's a powerfully gray area. And I think also we owe it to our young people to use other resources, that we have somebody from World War, a veteran, come in and talk about their experience in Vietnam. And we have a parent come in, and we have a mental health person come in, and we talk about loss, and we talk, if you're comfortable in that arena. If you're not comfortable in the arena and you want to teach read and write and arithmetic, I don't mess with this stuff. Don't mess. Because I think at that level, it will be phony. It's artificial. It will not come across well. Or get a lesson off the internet, which you can get, and just try to repeat that if these are zones that, where you're not that comfortable.
And I guess in the last 10 years, do you feel like the information that's out there about 9/11, that, you know, it's in the media, do you feel like it has been helpful? It's been good information in terms of informing, students, or has it? Do you think it's made things even more difficult for educators?
Yes. I do. I think it's been helpful. I think it's made it more difficult because we're, again, going into zones that there's not concrete answers to. So, yes. Now, has it been helpful? My 9-year-old told me today it was helpful because he had an awesome third grade teacher. He's had awesome teachers in other grades who have helped him understand something that he never lived. So I think for him it was helpful. For my son, who's 27, and my daughter, who is 30, who I was with the day 9/11 occurred in our living room at 8:40, 30 now. So she was 17, ready to go to school, and said, "Dad, Dad, come here." And we watched it together and stood in frozen silence. She'll never forget the moment. I'll never forget the moment. She works in schools now, and she helps young people still think about those events. So, yes, I think we've bridged some gaps. We have more gaps to bridge, and I don't know if we'll ever come up with the answer of why do so few sick people have such an impact on how this world works? I mean, that Margaret Mead quote of "never doubt that a thoughtful, committed small group of citizens could change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has." And 19 people that day changed our life as we know it. I don't go through airports the way I used to. We don't travel the way we used to. We don't communicate the way we used to. So I think we've done an adequate job. I think we have a lot more to do. And I hope we keep the door open to doing more and not closing it and saying, okay, we're done with that. Let's go on to whatever the next event is, or let's go on to the next tragedy.
Well, is there anything else you would like to add, I guess? Any advice you would give to educators?
Be open. Be listening. Be presenting in a way that suggests to young people, let's think about this. Be yourself. Be there every day if you can around stuff that happens, not just commemorating 9/11 on 9/11, and never should forget that day. Be there every day and go about the business of knowing you make a difference in the lives of young people, and what a powerful influence that is in making history better than what it was yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, a few weeks ago, or about a month ago, I was doing interviews just about 9/11, when people remember I was on the street, and I came across like a teenager, maybe 16 or 17. He asked me, you know, what year did that happen? Didn't know the year.
Sure,
Does that? I mean, is this sort of lack of information and knowledge out there concern you? And I mean, what kind of world would we be facing if there aren't educators out there who do a really good job?
Well, I'd like to say, as a former educator, that we'd be facing more ignorance than we face now if we weren't doing it. It doesn't concern me that the 16-year-old didn't know that it was 2001. It does concern me that I better inform him, and it concerns me more that he understand what happened that day and how we deal with emotional feelings about that day, and more so, like I've said many times already, more so how we deal with our own feelings of anger, frustration. My grandson said to me, I think they were jealous. And I thought, well, you know, that's kind of an interesting way to put that, jealousy. So how do you deal with those same feelings yourself? I think we owe it to our young people to probably help them understand that, yes, it was 2001, no duh. We owe it to our young people to go far beyond that and build this bridge to everyday ignorance and everyday discrimination and everyday respect and everyday civility and everyday. And that's the way I think we kind of change the world, is one piece at a time and one person at a time, to get them to do it differently than what 19 people did it 10 years ago.
That's all I have. Is there anything else you would like to add?
Powerful day to remember, powerful day to commemorate, powerful feelings around it, and let's powerfully remember that, and then let's powerfully try to remember other days when other things happen that are much less severe, but are also important, when conflict and violence and other things rear their head.